from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
I'm Michelle Tyrone Johnson. Welcome to Race Unwrapped, a podcast unwrapping all the ways race affects our world, whether we're thinking about it or not. My guest this episode is Dr. Kendra Calhoun, a linguist at UCLA. Since this season of Race Unwrapped is focused on the language of race, it was particularly cool for me to talk to someone whose expertise is on language and culture. So Dr. Calhoun and I talked about the evolution of the name Karen as a shorthand for a particular kind of entitled white woman who uses her privilege to call the police on Black people when she's suspicious of them being in places she thinks they don't belong. This is Race Unwrapped. I'm Michelle Tyrone Johnson, and my guest this episode is Dr. Kendra Calhoun. She's a linguistics professor in the anthropology department at UCLA. And in this episode, we're going to talk about the evolution of the term Karen. And my apologies to all the really nice Karens in the world.
I am Dr. Kendra Calhoun, and I'm currently a University of California President's Postdoctoral Fellow in the Department of Anthropology at UCLA. My PhD is in linguistics, but my subfield area of specialization is sociocultural linguistics. So I'm interested specifically in the relationship and the intersections between language, culture, society. I'm personally interested in like identity, how we construct different identities. So my work is really interdisciplinary. So that's how I sort of came out of a linguistics department, currently in an anthropology department, because there's a lot of overlap in those fields in terms of the work that I do.
Well, you're a perfect person to talk to. I think I could have probably talked to you about all the words in this podcast. But I'm glad that I found you for this one. So I wanted to talk about the word Karen, because it's become its own thing over the last few years. And, you know, I just wanted someone who's an expert in this field to tell me a few things about it or give me their opinions on a few things. So how would you characterize the name or the word Karen in the context of race?
I would say Karen is, like many words, particularly when it comes to race, one that started out with a very specific definition for a particular type of person, specifically a particular type of white woman, and it sort of expanded to mean more broadly sort of disagreeable white women. But the word really came to the forefront around, say around 2020, not necessarily starting then, but we were seeing in the U.S. this string of specifically white women harassing, calling the police on particularly Black, but not exclusively, you know, Black people who were just living their life. And so they weren't always called Karens. You know, Black people love to be linguistically created. So there was Barbecue Becky and Permit Patty, you know, the alliteration. But Karen has sort of come to be the umbrella term for all of these. But it was a way of specifically pointing to white women's behaviors that were, you know, enacting white privilege, you know, showing anti-Black racism, upholding white supremacy. And that part of it has sort of been lost. So now a Karen might be, you know, a sort of rude white woman at the grocery store without necessarily getting at what is it about this white woman that allows her to be rude at the grocery store and not very rarely face sort of social consequences.
And that is why it's been interesting that Karen has sort of just like jumped into the vernacular. I mean, I don't know if Webster's, you know, how they, you know, sort of incorporate words that have become so popular that, you know, it's like, well, we might as well put it in the dictionary. I don't know if Karen has evolved to that, especially because it's a name. And, you know, as you just sort of greatly pointed out, it's about this whole undertone of what it's trying to address when you call somebody a Karen, because you especially see that on social media. So do you think it's a healthy thing that people have come up with this term?
I think it's sort of a natural progression. You know, we like to give names to things or have a shorthand, have some way of describing something, a sort of quick and easy reference. It becomes a shared way of talking about something. And so I think, Karen became particularly popular when there were all these very widely publicized, basically people had a shared reference point. Mm-hmm. Not that this was the first time they ever necessarily saw someone behave in this way, but like in the span of a couple of months, people could say, here's five different examples that probably most people across the country have seen or heard of or heard someone talk about. And so I think Karen became a way of saying these things are connected, right? Even though these events, these women are existing in different spaces, it's different contexts. If we call them all Karens, it's a way of pointing out there's something shared between these different instances. Yeah. So I think it's helpful in that way that people can then be like, oh, right, okay, so this thing I'm talking about is at least similar to the thing you're talking about if we're giving it the same name. But it also, as I mentioned before, runs that risk of when you try to fit all of these different things under the same umbrella, you sort of lose the specificity and some of the nuance of what it was about those original instances that people were trying to point out by using that.
I mean, that's it in a nutshell. I mean, I think in particular, I mean, I can say this as a Black woman, and you're Black also, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or is there another term you prefer? You prefer African-American? Is there...
Yeah, I usually say Black.
Okay, all right, I do too, but, you know, I always ask. But, you know, as a Black person, and, you know, I love Black people, and I love how we can make the most horrific thing something that can be amusing as a way of sort of dulling the pain, or as a way of not being in a constant state of rage. And so that's what I wonder about with the word Karen sometimes, right? You kind of hit on it. Is it so euphemistic that it neuters the pain that is being addressed when we talk about a Karen reporting on someone Black for just living their life?
Yeah, I think that's sort of a risk of creating these sort of clever or cutesy or euphemistic names for things. I think, you know, there's in some of my own research looking at like humor online, I've drawn on a lot of great work in African American studies and media studies and history that's sort of traced this, cultural practice basically dating back to enslavement of the way that Black people use, just as you said, humor as a way of sort of dulling the pain, being able to live through it. You know, some people say like laughing to keep from crying. One great scholar, Danielle Fuentes Morgan, has a book called Laughing to Keep from Dying. So talking about humor as this like literal survival strategy in a country like the U.S. for Black people. And I think, you know, for Black people in the U.S., there's a shared understanding of what that kind of playfulness and like linguistic creativity is trying to do. But when it moves outside of Black cultural spaces, people are just might see it as just, oh, it's a funny way or it's a clever way. People are just being cutesy of like giving people a name, right? So when you sort of see all the like Permit Patty, Barbecue Becky, it's sort of like, oh, haha, those are funny names. But it was a way of sort of taking the power back of like, we're going to give this a name. We are going to frame the narrative, the people who was involved in this and people who weren't immediately involved in the interaction or don't have that sort of personal, immediate, shared understanding of like, this situation could have been a lot worse because the police were involved. So I think that sort of disconnect is part of what leads to something, you know, a word like Karen taking on such a euphemistic and sort of, it's not de-racialized because people still understand it's specific to white women, but I think the broader racial significance kind of gets lost in terms of like, why did people feel it was important to name this specific group or type of white woman and the behavior that she's enacting?
Well, and then that leads to the point, too, of especially during 2020, which, you know, you had the uprisings, the George Floyd uprisings. I'm here in Louisville, Kentucky, Breonna Taylor protest. Mm-hmm. And because it was, to use that great word, racialized, I've seen white women, I mean, you know, go, but that's racist to call us Karen. You know, that's, you know, you're using a word. I mean, I think I saw somebody say something like, it's the equivalent of the N-word. I'm like, oh, honey.
Oh, yeah. That one was the that one was wild.
You heard that too, right? Right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, honey, bunny. Nah, I don't think there are words that have been created in the English language yet to be the equivalent.
It's like, if you can write one out and can only say the first letter of another one, I don't think they're quite equivalent.
No, no. But that also leads to the question I had for you of why Karen? I mean, any thoughts to why Karen is the word, not Penelope or Victoria or, you know, well, why Karen?
So I've seen a couple of, I actually didn't know. I was like, I don't know why that name stuck. I was like, it's one where it seems sort of generational, since Karens are your, or, you know, the women who represent Karens usually seem to be maybe around their 40s, 50s. So I was like, maybe people were trying to get at a name that they associate with that age group.
That's a good point.
But one theory that I saw was that Karen was already in circulation, at least in some circles, as the name for just a generally annoying white woman. So I think it was, what is that comedian's name? Dave Cook, I think it was.
Okay.
Like years ago had, for one of his stand-up specials, had this character named Karen, who was in, you know, this narrative that he was doing. She was like the nagging, annoying, you know, white woman friend or someone's girlfriend. I don't remember the exact story that he tells. So then that was this sort of existing name that people had. I was like, I did not watch his stand up. So like, I didn't know that.
Right.
When I saw it, I was like, okay, yeah, the way that he's like voicing this character is very much reminiscent of like the type of people that we would label as Karens now.
Right.
But then at the same time, I was like, well, the fact that so many people still have that question though, of like, well, where did Karen come from? Mm-hmm. Suggests to me that maybe for some people that was a point of reference, but it's not like the defining thing that made, you know, Karen the name that people chose. So yeah, I mean, it could have been just a sort of circumstantial that was a name that people agreed on. Maybe there was like a certain really popular, I don't know, social media post or someone who went with that name. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know, but it's interesting to think about, like, why wasn't it, you know, why wasn't it Becky or Patty, right? Since those are some of the other names that circulated. Because I can't even think of like an alliterative one with Karen.
And that's the whole thing. Now, so, I mean, I am not a linguist. I don't even play one on TV. I have no idea. But I always wondered if it's two things. One, I am a writer, though. And sounds of words are something that, you know, I mean, I'm not a poet, I'm a playwright. But when I was getting my MFA, I had to listen to a lot of talk about poetry. And so, you know, the word Karen kind of cuts, right? Like Karen. Okay, Karen. You know, in a way that if maybe you had a softer sound, like, okay, Patty. I don't know, but it's just interesting how Karen, even more than Becky, because Becky was just sort of a, you know, we just call all white women Becky as a shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, but Karen just turned into its own thing, right?
Yeah, and there's even, I believe it was in The Root, there was an article about like the difference between a Karen and a Becky, and it's talking about like how there's, you know, an age difference. Mm-hmm. And so then they're like, the language that they use and the way that they dress and where you might see them. And so sort of laying out all the differences between them. But I have also heard the sort of sound based theory that you mentioned of like the K and how that, you know, I'll avoid using all the linguistic terminology, but the way that we produce the sound K, you know, is different from how we might say something like Susan, right? Like you said, Patty, right? You can produce those words in a, as you're saying, a sort of softer sound. It's hard to produce a soft k, right? You feel like you have to really like push that air out from your throat. And yeah, I could see something like, I probably did see something where people would do, you know, something like KKK, so like KK Karen. Mm. So getting that sort of visual, like textual relationship of trying to say like Karen association with KKK, tying it to white supremacy. So yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of different possibilities for how maybe different groups of people were using that word or why they were drawn to that particular name. And then it all sort of converged where people were like, okay, I'm seeing that we're all liking the word Karen as our choice for how we're going to refer to this woman. Maybe we came to it in different ways, but we'll just stick with that. And that's how we're going to go with it. But yeah, it's probably possible to trace back maybe, you know, people like to do searches or rather like run analyses on big data, like from Twitter and other social media platforms, and see sort of when the use of the word starts to tick up. So
I mean, it's funny you say
in one way or another.
I was going to say that because I think that's the other thing that's different is social media, right? Like social media can create something and make something trend and make something a shorthand quicker than it ever did when, you know, I was in my 20s and 30s and there was no social media. And so, I mean, I look at social media as doing what my best friend and I have always done, which is have a shorthand for things that, you know, we can send a text by shorthand and somebody who interpreted the text or, you know, who got in the middle of the text would not have any idea what we were talking about. But then that ends up being the other thing about Karen, right? And social media is that we don't even get to hide these references. Like, they're open references. I mean, what do you think of that? I mean, so it's not like it's a secret code for how we talk about problematic white women. Like you said, when you said the root, if something's in the root, it might as well just be on billboards.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sort of the blessing and the curse of social media, especially platforms like TikTok or Twitter, where you just have these massive amounts of people. And although you can certainly choose to make your content private, part of what draws people to social media is the sociality, the ability to interact with other people, see what people are posting, comment, you know, share it with others. And so in order to do that, you sort of have to take the risk of making something public that in another context would have been would not be mixed company, right? It would be staying in the family or in the group, you know, in your social network. Yeah. And in some cases it's, you know, we can talk about things from Black culture online in ways that only people who have experienced that or been immersed in it or are already familiar with it are going to get.
Right.
You sort of post it without, you can maybe describe it, but you don't explain it.
Right.
And people they get it or they don't. Yeah, the other side of that is that maybe people are posting something enough that people outside of the group start to recognize the patterns or figure out what the thing means, and then they're like, oh, well, now that I get it, I'm going to use this now,
exactly,
too.
Exactly.
Because they don't necessarily understand the context of why Black people would use that or, like, you know, the history of it, how it's connected, deeply rooted to Black culture. You know, this is where issues of, like, appropriation and things come in, but... Yeah, I think that's something that you just sort of always have to weigh, and that social media users will decide, like, how much of this do we want to put out there? It's something that I see a lot. So I'm currently doing some research on Black language and culture on TikTok. And so
interesting.
A lot of times when there are trends among Black TikTok users, so there's one right now where people are sort of about sort of idiomatic expressions. And so people will say, like, oh, this is how you would say it in English. This is how you would say it in a different language. And then, of course, Black people were like, well, here's how white people would say it. Here's how Black people would say it, which is a new iteration of a trend that has happened in some form or another multiple times in the past couple of years. But every time one of these trends happens, you know, some people are like, oh, this is great. I love the way Black people talk. We're so creative. Like, I love seeing all the different ways people are doing this. And some people who say, why are you putting all this? You're just giving non-Black people a guidebook for how to use African-American English as non-Black people. So there's always kind of competing perspectives on like the good, the pros and cons of.
Right. And I get both. Right. I get both.
Black language and culture. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're both completely valid.
Right. Like I get how all cultures, mind you, right? Like all cultures have this shorthand for things. And if you observe it, I remember thinking about how a few years ago I went to a play that was written by an Asian American playwright. And it dealt with Asian American themes, and the group of friends I went with were my Asian American girlfriends. And I loved observing how they were picking up on things that I would never have thought twice about, and just like glorying in the fact that, oh my God, our culture's on stage, and did you see that? I loved it, not from the perspective of I want to co-opt it, like, oh, I'm going to say that, I'm going to talk about that. But just I love culture, right? I love seeing how other people have their things. But then I also see the other side of it, the co-opting part. Like there is a cell phone commercial that just annoys the hell out of me. It's all about how you no matter what, you get a free phone. And this woman who's white goes, yeah, my phone is busted. They gave us a free phone. And I was like, I can't say that that's a Black word. You know what I mean? Like, I can't swear that busted
is a... It just doesn't feel right when she says it.
I was like, well, I don't know. I think if it's not a Black word... That's an actress who that's a foreign word to her mouth in that context. But yet you see that all the time, right? And you see, I don't watch sitcoms the way I used to, but if you watch sitcoms enough, sitcoms are really good at taking Black vernacular, Black turns of phrase and making it a thing. I just have one more question to ask you before we kind of wrap up. Do you know, is there a white male word or name that has sort of the same resonance and commonality as Karen?
There isn't a single name that I can think of that works in quite the same way. Mm-hmm. The first name that comes to mind is Chad.
That
has sort of taken on a slightly different meaning. Since now it's used in the sort of manosphere and like incel culture, so it's taken on a slightly different meaning in that context, whereas before it was just sort of like maybe preppy jock, youngish white guy. And I don't do research in that area, so I don't know if they picked that name because it was already in circulation as the sort of stereotypical name. For white guys, but I'm actually working on a paper right now. I've been working on this project for a while, but it's looking at the way that people on social media construct this idea of what I'm calling the straight white boy. And a friend of mine, I was thinking about this. He described it as like what seems like the straight white boy is like the Karen's son. So the idea of the straight white boy is like, this is someone who just ignores social rules. They do whatever they want. You know, they speak to people however they want. They have all this social privilege, and that just it imbues and shapes all of their behaviors and how they interact with people in the world. So coming at it from a linguistic perspective, I'm looking at, you know, how are people voicing it? How are they like describing how a straight white boy would talk? And thinking about sort of how are they connecting it, you know, the language to these other social behaviors and beliefs. But even with that, there isn't like a single name that people connect to it, which I think is something that makes like the Karen so specific. But I think it also speaks to the way that like white men's antisocial behavior, anti-Black behavior, all of that is sort of expected and normalized. If there's a way of saying like, oh, well, that's just how straight That's just how straight men act, wow. right? That's just what men do. Men are the violent ones. Men are the ones upholding white supremacy. And so I think there's sort of, you know, good and bad aspects to this where it's like, well, we could see sort of sexism, misogyny coming into this where people are like hyper-focused on the fact that women are engaging in these behaviors. But there's also an important sort of awareness being made of like white women engage in white supremacist mm-hmm. and anti-Black behaviors, and that has to be acknowledged. So there's always more than one thing happening, which makes anything like, you know, the Karen, any sort of like social type or social figure like that is always going to be a little bit messy and tricky. But I think it is very interesting that there isn't a single name for white men in the same way.
I think so too. I mean, I think that that'd be worthy of some study of why, but I think you hit on a lot of it. I mean, when there's so much globalized power, you know, how do you, but then the other side of it is, I think the reason why Karen, in my opinion, has become its own thing is because of the specificity of that kind of problematic white woman. So it's not just the white woman who like sits on a porch and, you know, and looks judgmental as Black people walk down the street. It's the white woman mm-hmm. who interjects herself into things that are none of her business because of assumptions she's making. And
yeah.
And I think that to me seems to be why there had to be given a name to it. And I mean, but again, that's why I'm talking about the language of race, because all of this is bigger than the word itself, right? I mean, I would think with what you do, then you of all people get that, right?
Absolutely. And the fact that a single word or expression, regardless of how it starts out, can always change meaning or might have multiple meanings depending on who picks it up. So I think always thinking about like, what exactly does it mean? Mm-hmm. Does it, like when you, as things get more popular and people just sort of using it and you get used to hearing it, it's always good to sort of take a step back and be like, is everyone using this in the same way? Or does this actually mean what I think it means? Going back to the Princess Bride, thinking about like actually paying close critical attention to like how that word is circulating. But I think your point about the also needing to differentiate the different types of sort of racist or discriminatory behavior, because yeah, there's people who might think racist things mm-hmm. as they're moving through the grocery store or moving through life and seeing all the people around them, but they never say anything. They never do anything. Mm-hmm. They never act on them. And that's different from, you know, these white women who are very actively and intentionally choosing to, as you said, interject themselves, get involved in people's business. In most cases, who aren't bothering anyone, you know, why do you feel like you need to question whether or not this person lives in this apartment building? Why do you need to question whether these children have a permit to sell, you know, water bottles? For, like, how does it impact your life in any way? And that's a very particular type of person who would feel the need to engage in those sorts of behaviors.
That was Dr. Kendra Calhoun, a linguist at UCLA. In our next episode, I'll talk to University of Louisville professor Ricky Jones about how the use of the word riot seems to depend upon who is doing the describing and who is doing the protesting. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Thank you for listening to Race Unwrapped.
Race Unwrapped is produced by Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Our executive producer is Laura Ellis, audio assistance from Eric Matthews, and music by Allison Cross. For more information, to contact us, or to support Race Unwrapped, visit wfpl.org/raceunwrapped. From LPM, Louisville Public Media.